Egan, I know that you're big when it comes to direct response and click funnels, or, you know, funnel-oriented marketing and automation and all that stuff. And I have absolutely no issue with any of those things. But you do know that I am a huge believer in the power of brand, especially when it comes to individuals, so that they can differentiate themselves from anybody else who happens to have a similar resume to theirs. So in the past, and by the way, Nonfiction Brand Podcast listeners, I'm talking to Egan Heath, and he's an SEO specialist, I would say. You tell me what your expertise is.
Sure, yeah. I have an SEO company called Get Found Madison, based in Madison, Wisconsin. We also do pay-per-click advertising and, of late, building funnels and doing email automation and things like that, too. So all those things. And I've really come down on the side of direct response, particularly for small businesses. And I'm very intrigued of what you have to say about branding and personal branding. I sort of see them on a spectrum a little bit in terms of there's brand focus over here on marketing on one side of the spectrum. And then on the other, it's really direct response. Are we getting leads? Are we getting signups, you know?
Well, and the key thing that is beneficial about the way you approach things is you can point to direct ROIs, direct return on investments, all the way down to practically like nanoseconds or numbers of clicks that convert, number of conversions left hanging, number of shopping carts, left
abandoned. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And all that stuff can be incredibly helpful. It's just not where I live, you know, on the creative side of the fence where I am. Yeah, it's a little bit of that old saying, if the only tool in your hand is a hammer, everything's a nail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my case, I don't think branding is a hammer. I think branding is the toolbox. And within that toolbox are any number of tools. And a lot of those tools are the ones you do that you're directly involved with.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, as a writer, I'm not a huge one for writing SEO copy.
Mm-hmm.
However, I love writing copy that scores well when it comes to search engine optimization. I think there's a difference between the two.
It's kind of where do you start, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because I have in the past gotten a list of here are the phrases and terms that you need to weave into this copy block.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's helpful. But that's not going to tie my hands as a writer.
Sure.
Versus some copywriters who it just reads like a sanitary list of, you know, ingredients on the back of a Campbell soup can almost.
You're seeing a blog is written for search engines. You're a human. You're like, oh, I stumbled upon some search engine's blog. Like, this is not for me. This
yeah, exactly. It you can smell it.
Okay.
You know,
certainly there's going too far with that, right? Yeah,
it can be. But then again, there can be blog posts that aren't getting the search engine oomph that it could be had the writer been a little bit more savvy when it comes to things like SEO.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are missing out. I think the reason that I, in my speeches in public, you know, I'll take a polemical stance against branding for the reason that we're dealing with a lot of small businesses of a couple million dollars in revenue or less sometimes. So I hear the phrase all the time, we need to get our name out there. We need to raise awareness. Those are kind of the words that people use when like they know they need marketing, but they don't know what that is or what that looks like. And I know what they need is leads and sales. And so in my own business, there's no confusion for me. I put on a hat and I'm head of sales. I put on a hat and I'm head of marketing. And so I have conversations with myself and there's no dispute of what head of sales wants from head of marketing. I want leads. I want to sit down and have conversations with people who want help with their digital marketing, right?
Yeah.
Or potentially I sell courses and trainings and things like that too. And to me, that's what it's all about. Now, I understand there's a wide funnel. And at the top, people are hearing me speak. People are, you know, reading a blog post. People are coming to a webinar, things like that. But I know that I want some percent of those people to contact me for business reasons. And I think, you know, maybe we would disagree on what is that revenue number where it makes sense. But I think if you're Coca-Cola, if you're Budweiser, you know, run a Super Bowl ad, make people laugh, have that sort of branding piece. But if you're under $1 billion in revenue, I think you should be tracking pretty much every dollar you spend on marketing.
I don't think there is necessarily a dollar threshold for what we're talking about because, yeah, you need hardworking, what I would call retail advertising and marketing. You know, the stuff that is, look at this image, catches your eye, but ultimately we want to convert you to some type of action, a call to action. And I agree with you. If you're just doing brand advertising, which is, look at me,
mm-hmm.
That's waste. That's a total waste of time. There should always be a call to action that leads you to do something, whether it's subscribe to the podcast or purchase this specific model this week only for half off, you know, or can we get your email address? You know, all those things. There always needs to be that, hey, look over here. I would like to engage with you.
Yeah, I think if there is a call to action, then we're probably in direct response territory, right?
Yeah, well, it can be depending on how hard-coded that direct response is.
How much of a hard sell is it?
Yeah.
Is it money or is it, like you said, a subscriber or something?
Yeah, or even the fill out this form right here. It will go into HubSpot or ClickFunnels or some other CRM device of some sophistication. And then you're automatically going to get ping back emails that are automated. And this is where I think we do have a little bit of disagreement, potentially. I get so many of those auto ping back emails and things like that. The second I get them, the person who got me to sign up on their thing loses me instantly because it's, hey, I signed up for your email list because I found you interesting and of value. And now I'm part of your bing, 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 bing. Bot network.
It lost that personalization.
Yeah, it became this algorithmic, if this, then that, respond back. And I'm a huge one for, as much as I love social media, I love social media that is what I think of as carbon-based, not silicon-based.
All right. That's a good distinction.
You know, and you can tell it when there are people there responding to you. Now, that's not to say that bots can't have value, because let's face it, if I'm going to IKEA's site to figure out how to make the blah blah that I bought and there's a bot that can help me through it, I'm just like, what, 90% of human beings? I would prefer that, because if you can tell me put slot B into thing A, tighten it this way, whatever, and get the thing done, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern is that when things get too programmatic, when brand suffers at the hands of, it's efficient for us to do it this way because we don't have to hire anyone to actually talk to you.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
You know?
That's a pretty damning critique. I like that.
You know, what was it? Justice Potter Stewart once said, the definition of pornography is, I know it when I see it.
Yep, that's right.
Well, it's the same thing with the response of engaging with a company or an individual. I know when you turned your bot on, because I can feel it.
Yeah.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus.
I'm sure this happens to you. You get a query from LinkedIn. It says, hey, I saw you speak at XYZ.
It's getting worse every day. There's multiple every day and over a dozen sometimes, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so the ones that actually get through my filter are the ones that are clearly written by a human being. Like if they can cite when we met, where we met, what we talked about and whatever, you know, link to you instantly. And I'll even link to the ones that are, maybe this feels a little bit cut and pasty, but they probably just cut and pasted some boilerplate copy to invite me to join their LinkedIn network, you know, or connect via LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
If within 5 minutes I get a ping back that says, great, I'd love to tell you about my series of courses on blankety blankety blank, boom, instant unfollow. You're dead to me, sir. You are dead to me.
Yeah. Are they violating the rules? Like you would never do that in person if we met? Like,
yeah.
Hey, DP, I met you at networking thing. Suddenly I'm trying to sell you a thing while we're talking. Is it, you're violating that, but you're doing it virtually?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. It's the, and believe me, I've been to face-to-face networking events here in Madison, Wisconsin, where we are both located. And that has happened where it's like, so you walk up to someone, you have a nice conversation. You find out what they do in your head. They're going, oh my God, I hope they aren't going to try to sell me financial services.
Yeah.
And the person doesn't. And you're like, oh, cool person. I'll be happy to see them again in the future and maybe talk, whatever. Versus the person who you get to that stage and then all of a sudden they say, you know what? I'd love to take you out for coffee and tell you about something that we have going on. It's like, you violated the prime directive of face-to-face networking, which is don't have an expectation after that. Now, I have no problem with anybody saying, could I have your business card?
Sure.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
What you do with that determines whether I give you the time of day or not. after that.
Mm-hmm. The coffee date is the one that bothers me because it's like this casual next step. But the idea is it's going to turn into a sales situation. Awkward. It's going to be this like weird blend of let's talk about our families and what we're into. And like, oh, by the way, like we sell insurance or whatever. And that's like, I understand the offline version and you're helping me understand the online version of why that's a no-no.
Yeah.
I think my, again, like how my experience fed into this was really starting small with consulting clients in terms of some of my first clients were gyms, salons, things like that. And it just they needed that business. And I was really like mentally inspired and intrigued by this idea of money goes into marketing and more money comes out and you can measure it, you know?
Yeah.
So I really liked that side of it. I don't know your career background super well, but it sounds like you've worked with much bigger companies where branding was a piece of it. And so you're kind of coming from that world. Is that right?
Yes. But for the majority of my career, it's always been clients that never have enough money to do all the things they needed to do.
Okay.
You know,
however, always scarcity.
Yeah, there's always scarcity, but there was always an understanding generally that we have brand communications and we have not necessarily hard sell, but we have retail engagement oriented marketing as well. So how does that play out? Well, you know, you look at a company's budget or an individual's budget for that matter, and you say, okay, how hard do you want your business card really to work for you? Is it a brand level communication that gives people an understanding of who you are, what you do and how you do it? Or is there a hard connection to and sign up on our website for this or come in for a 2-for-1 haircut, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because if you're talking to a salon, they just need to book. They need to book, book, book. So a business card for them that had a, hey, we just met, I'd love to offer you 50% off a haircut. That would be an excellent use of a business card. If you are an insurance salesman or insurance agent, maybe not so much. Because what's going to get me to buy your insurance or come to you for your services might be the brand associations that have been achieved because your massive national company sponsors a bowl game during the football season, you know, or something like that. Everybody needs to do both, because if you're just a haircutter for $15 cheap haircuts, well, there are companies for that, and then you're a commodity.
Ah, yeah.
The goal of any haircutter is not to be a commodity. It's to become the next Paul Mitchell, who is a multimillionaire because he built his brand to the point where he can get $40 for a bottle of shampoo.
Right. That's where that premium comes from.
That's right. And so it's this tight walk. And, you know, I absolutely understand the need for where you're coming from, but I'm saying we're not in disagreement. I think what we need to, especially listeners, I think what listeners could really benefit from is the idea of understanding there are brand level communications and there are retail engagement communications. You kind of need to do both.
Do you think it's true? The smaller you are, the more you need to lean toward direct response.
I think it can be helpful on the paid stuff that you do, because if you're putting money out, if you could spend $10 to make $100, would you do it? Yeah, you should. So if Egan Heath can come to me with that math of if we spend $10, you'll make $100. Yeah, I need that. But at the same time, to build my premiumness, I may need to do some brand level communications in the form of posting on Instagram. For example, let's say a hair salon. Post on Instagram the next time you do a really fantastic hairdo for somebody. Maybe spend a little bit of your budget on making those Instagram shots a little bit more than just, hey, I just cut Susie's hair. Doesn't she look great? It's more of a, no, we actually brought in a couple of models. We did their hair. We did a shoot. And now we have a library of photographs that we can put out over the year on Instagram and Facebook and things like that. And in the post is not a hard 50% off this week. It might be a value added incentive, like come on in and we'll give you a free color consultation based on the latest colors coming out of the Milan hair show or whatever. There's a difference between discounting and value add. And I don't think people understand that as much as they should.
Yeah. And that fits into the ClickFunnels world in terms of one of the things Russell Brunson really pushes is webinars, particularly for a service business. So I'm taking him up on his suggestion of do a webinar every single week. Yeah. So I just did week two this year. You know, I'm a couple of weeks behind here, but like starting now, like I'm doing it every single week now.
So how can listeners follow one of your webinars, even if they've just started?
The best way is on our blog at getfoundmadison.com. You can opt into the email list there.
I got to tell you, Egan, right there, the fact that you're doing a weekly webinar is a brand building exercise.
Okay, that's interesting. I really think of it as direct response, so I want to hear your take on it.
Well, it's both. I mean, ideally, there's some direct response that can come out of the webinar, but I will tell you that far more people will watch the webinar, will not say a word, you'll never hear from them until you meet them a year from now and they go, oh yeah, I watch your stuff all the time.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like this podcast, you know, this is going to be episode 80 something, I think, of the podcast. So that's 80 weeks plus worth of podcast. I don't know how many people are listening. I mean, I can get loose numbers and stuff like that. But at the end of it, there's not a hard call to action.
Yeah. It sounds like you see content marketing as brand building.
Yes. Is that right? And yeah. Content marketing can be the thing that tips people into the funnel, you know, and ideally content marketing, you know, if we're talking about creating things of value that draw people to you, that's kind of like getting them right to the edge of the funnel. I could easily at the end of this podcast say, hey, and by the way, this week I'm starting a new web series called Blankety Blankety Blank. You can watch the first 5 episodes for free. And if you like them, you can then take my whole course on Teachable or, you know, one of the other things. I could easily graft on a harder direct response vehicle to this, which is heretofore a brand building exercise for me.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. We're really coming at it from different angles, but like you said, we're talking about the same thing, right?
We're meeting in the middle.
Yeah. So Dennis Kennedy is a very famous direct response marketer, has some great books, kind of the No BS Guide to, and then like this whole series, and one of them is Direct Response. And, you know, Russell Brunson, ClickFunnels is really drawing from guys like that. And one of the things Dennis Kennedy said is if you're a small business, you don't spend your money on branding directly, but you get it as a benefit of the direct response you're doing. And I think that webinar is an example of that. I was over the moon of the first one. I got 6x return on the ads I spent on it.
Wow.
So I ran Google display ads, which are like banner ads. Mm-hmm. I ran Facebook ads and obviously promoted my email list and, you know, educated people for an hour kind of thing. And then I had people take me up on an offer for my courses. And, you know, more than paid back the ads we ran for it. And that was on the first one out the gates. So I'm looking at this going, wow, this is a very direct way to do one-to-many sales. And that's kind of the piece I'm wondering is, I very much hear what you're saying on the automation. I think being in marketing, we're probably on a lot of people's lists. So we see it maybe even more than the average person. But nobody wants more emails, right? Like email feels like work. Whereas a social media post might not, right? But it's still just like the idea behind the automation is that customer sales cycle. If they're going through this customer journey and they might need some education. And so like the way I think is I'm going to bring them along for that journey. I'm going to show them what's possible. And then when they want to take that next step, there's that call to action like you mentioned, you know.
Hey, nonfiction branders, did you know I wrote a book? Well, I did, and it's called Rotoma, the ROI of Social Media Top of Mind. I wrote it with my colleague Spencer X. Smith, and it's all about Rotoma, an acronym that means Return on Top of Mind Awareness. Best-selling author and NYU Stern School of Business professor Scott Galloway called it a book that starches the fluff from social media and helps managers allocate capital and find the unicorn among unicorns, ROI. And Chief Content Officer at Marketing Profs, Ann Handley said, this isn't just a practical way to think about the return on social media, it's also a spot-on, accurate way to reframe your social efforts. Check out all the 5-star reviews on Amazon by searching Rotoma, ROTOMA. Pick up your copy today and start building your personal, professional, and small business brand the Rotoma way. There's a little bit of chicken-egg thing going on here. What do you lead with? And it really depends on your situation. I think the biggest thing that people come out of our conversation today is understanding that it can't be one alone. It can't be the other alone. It needs to be a little bit of both, because for all the harder sell stuff you put out there, all the kind of content marketing oriented, hey, I'm giving this away. I want to create a relationship with you. I want to build rapport with you. And I also want to, frankly, put some deposits in the bank of goodwill with you so that I don't know, if I come out with a new book and I announce it, you're going to go, you know what? I've gotten so much from this person. I'm going to give them back. I'm going to buy that book. However, we're also talking a little bit about slightly different things in depending on whether you're a service-oriented individual or a big inventory-oriented individual. And what I mean by that is my inventory, if you really cut everything out, is hours. I only have so many hours of a day that are billable. Now, if I come up with some passive income properties, you know, that can make me the proverbial dollars while I sleep thing, like courses that you can take via the internet or whatever, I can multiply that. But still, hours are my inventory. That's no different than a hair salon. Hours are their inventory times the number of seats in their shop, right? So for me, the equation's a little bit different because I don't have as many seats or as many hours that need filling. So, you know, if you're talking to that salon owner, direct response, you spend $10, we can fill your seats and give you a pick your number X return. It's like, yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah. I think the way I'm coming at it is, again, following Russell Brunson, Dan Kennedy, others, where they're all about the direct response, kind of what they're saying is, if you're a service business, you can add on this other part of your business that's like information products. And so you're educating through your information products. Those have, you know, zero variable costs. So when I grant somebody access to my course, it doesn't cost me anything else. It's a virtual course. It's in the cloud, right?
Right.
So it's like, that's getting me leads that then those turn into service clients. But the people who just pay for the information products, they liquidate all the ad costs and more. So it's like, that can be a profitable like division of my company is just buying, you know, people buying our courses, buying my trainings. And then some of those people graduate to doing consulting with us. So it's almost encouraging you, if you're a service business, think about how you get in the information product business too.
Yeah.
And you do get some scale out of that. Like you're saying, you run out of that. I take it you're saying we're a one-man consultancy.
Right.
Is that right?
And I want to keep it that way. But at the same time, I want to maximize things. So frankly, I need to take a page out of your playbook and come up with those information products, those courses, those add-on things that ideally don't take away from the time I have for direct person-to-person consulting with companies or individuals or whatever, but can give me a whole new profit center for my business.
Yeah, I think that's the way to think about it. That's how I'm thinking about it, and that's what I'm really excited about.
Yeah. So let's talk about your course. I mean, you said you're in week two right now, or you just wrapped up week two?
This is on the webinar. So I teach an in-person course in Madison called Digital Marketing Mastery. We just finished up 2.0. I'm going to be launching 3.0 soon.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's been really good. It's been mostly people in marketing departments. We've had some business owners in there, but I think people in marketing departments really enjoy going through, learning, you know, search marketing, learning paid social, learning email, going into, you know, video and display and, you know, conversion optimization and funnels and all these things we're talking about. And then basically after the first time I did that, I went back and I went home and I like recorded those into videos so I could sell the video course itself too.
Right.
So I was able to pre-sell it before I even taught it, right?
Right.
Here's the syllabus. Okay, I was one step ahead of the class. And then once I had that syllabus, you know, of here's 12 lessons, basically turn that into an e-course. And now I can just sell that e-course directly.
Wow. How can people, again, find this webinar if they wanted to watch one of your webinars coming up?
Probably the best way is to get on the email list. You can just email me, Egan, E-A-G-A-N at getfoundmadison.com. Happy to include you. And, you know, I show case studies and things like that of, we've had businesses. One was a psychotherapy practice and we set up her Google ads and she was full within 4 months.
Wow.
And she said, hey, can you turn those ads off? So she went from brand new business to we're full.
Wow.
Within you know, a few months like that. And so I always show those case studies and the stories and get people excited. Like this really does work. This can work. It works for people just like you. And then I talk about, you know, here's the course if you want to learn how to do it yourself, because I was a history major and I used to work in corporate project management. Like I had no background in marketing before this. So I'm a big believer in if I did it, you can do it too.
Well, there you go. If you want to find out about, I would almost call it the mechanics of marketing, Egan Heath is a great resource. And that's Egan, E-A-G-A-N, Heath.
H-E-A-T-H, like the candy bar.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's right, because this guy's sweet, right? Check him out online on LinkedIn. Are you open to people pinging you on LinkedIn and asking to join?
Thank you. Yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best one. I'm the only Egan Heath, so you'll find me there.
All right, Egan Heath, check him out on LinkedIn. He's going to be back here next week to continue our conversation, where I want to actually talk about the brand called Egan Heath and his journey from don't know nothing about marketing to, wow, I'm up there teaching about it. I'm DP Knutton for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast. I'd love for you to like, subscribe, refer, and review the podcast, because that's how people find out about it. And we'd like you to invite your friends to listen as well. For now, that's me, and he is
Egan Heath.
And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.